or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Rick Lawrence, and for the next hour, I will be reading from the August 14, 2026 edition of the Tribune Sentinel covering Niagara County and Grand Island on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Taking a look at the lead article on this August 14th sheet, new owner of Lewiston Event Center eager to succeed and grow business, by Joshua Maloney, GM's managing editor. There are several shots of the Lewiston Event Center showing the corrugated side building, showing an open sign, and then another shot of a very attractive looking set of bowling runs. There's also a picture of a four-chair bar and viewing screen. So it looks like there's quite a number of things within the center that will be a part of the continuing ownership with a new manager. Here is the article. Lewiston's bowling alley is poised for another evolution. Last Friday, the Lewiston Event Center announced a change in leadership. With both heavy hearts and warm hearts, we want to share some exciting news with our amazing community. Outgoing management posted. After 12 incredible years, the Simon and Hibbard families have made the decision to sell the Lewiston Event Center. While it's bittersweet to close one chapter, we couldn't be more excited for the next one. We have complete confidence in Mike Corella and family and are truly excited to watch them continue to grow this incredible business and strengthen the community that has made it so special. Corella operated the Hyde Park Ice Pavilion in Niagara Falls for more than a decade. We built it up to what it was before we left, and I'm proud of it. We did a good job there, he said on Tuesday. Through the rink, Corella gained a following of people and a network of workers. He said LEC owners Emery Simon and Howard Hibbard were looking for someone to take this over and keep it going as a bowling alley, and not just demolish it and make it apartments or something like that. Corella said what appealed to him about the LEC is that it kind of reminds me of the hockey rink, bar, restaurant, and we did a lot of pizza and wings up there. That kind of was the beginning of it. I know the atmosphere, and then when they contacted me, I came in here. I was in here a couple of months, just hanging out, and it's like, give it a shot. I'm from Lewiston. I'm a Lewport grad. It helps if you're a local person when you buy a building like this, because you'll have more support. Plus, Corella knows what people in this area want and like, according to him. He said his plan is to methodically learn the ropes, get to know the patrons, and then work on improvements. Corella said his initial plans include updating the simulator, room technology, moving the equipment into a larger back room, and then utilizing the existing room for dining and a stage for live music. Just kind of make it more family-centered, he said. Presently, there are bowling lanes on each side of the LEC, the right side of the center. That's always going to stay bowling, Corella said. But if we're not using this other side enough, it could be a skating rink. There could be indoor pickleball. Emphasis on could be. We're not going to change that right away, though, because we're not sure, Corella said. You've got to get your feet wet before you start doing massive changes. But it has so much potential. As for opening up the center for the upcoming season, the week after Peach Fest is the goal, but we're waiting on a liquor license, Corella said. It's in the works. I couldn't get a liquor license until I bought the place, and negotiations took a little bit longer. Once the LEC gets rolling, we're going to add more leagues, Corella said. We're going to do Saturday morning bowling for kids. They used to have that here. I'm in the works for trying to figure out exactly when to start that and what the price is. I just want to make it affordable so kids can come back in here and bowl, because when I was little, this was jammed on Saturday. Over the course of almost 15 years, Simon and Hibbard made extensive changes to the LEC property, starting with the new LED lighting and a security camera system, and following with new roofing, ceilings, carpet, plumbing, and HVAC. They also put in a larger bar and a virtual game room, enhanced the food offerings, revamped the bowling lanes, and welcomed Lewiston Porter student athletes back to use the facility. We put a lot of money into it and a lot of sweat and tears into it, Simon said in 2021. We believe that the community needs a community event center, he added. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you for allowing our families to be a part of so many of your memories, the former LEC management shared. We're forever grateful and will always cherish the friendship and community we built together. Here's to the next chapter. And on to page 2 of the August 14, 2026 Tribune Sentinel Dispatch. The headline, Assistance Measures Follow Torrential Rains. By the editor-in-chief, Terry Duffy. The recent torrential rains that struck Niagara County are now bringing assistance measures into the spotlight. Jeff Ritter, administrator at the Town of Lewiston Water Pollution Control Center, provided information of interest Monday for property owners and residents who continue to be affected by flooding. Also, town resident Sharon K. Bland announced a change. It looks like ORG petition this week, calling on officials to take action and address long-standing infrastructure problems and overdue improvements. The Lewiston community, like many others in Niagara, experienced very heavy rains that twice resulted in numerous reports of flooding and impacted properties. Weather data from the storms, August 2nd and 3rd, showed rain totals of more than 4 inches in Sanborn and 6 inches in Ransomville. Ritter provided information to help the community better understand the what's what behind stormwater and sanitary sewer performance. It has come to our attention that many residents do not know the difference between stormwater and sanitary sewers, he said. Rutter explained the basics behind sanitary and how stormwater infiltration goes on to impact it. Sanitary sewer comes from your toilet, shower, sinks, and laundry, he said. The sanitary sewer is a victim of stormwater infiltrating it when it pools up on the ground during heavy rain downpours. We're all interconnected, as the sanitary sewer in your neighborhood leaves by one pipe which we all share. He went on to provide a variety of information that's intended to help residents better understand the details behind inflow infiltration. Titled, Things to Do to Protect Your Home from the Sewage Backup, the list found in the Town of Lewiston Facebook page includes information on how water affects sewer lines, hung plumbing, a new town code covering new builds and sewer lateral lines, the town's backflow preventer program that includes $2,500 reimbursements for property owners who install one, information covering the correct installation of sump pumps and downspouts on properties, and details on installing a guillotine valve, a.k.a. sliding gate valve or night gate valve, at the property. Others include some do's and don'ts on grass clipping and debris removal, and information on vent stacks, clean-out piping on properties, what happens if they're disconnected. Bland said the Environmental Protection Agency has highlighted the risks associated with aging infrastructure that can lead to water contamination during flooding events, a concern for the health and safety of all Niagara County residents. It is imperative that our local government takes immediate action. We propose the county conducts a comprehensive assessment of our water management systems and allocates sufficient funds towards upgrading and modernizing the infrastructure, she said. Among the improvements suggested are, 1, expanding and improving the county's sewer systems to handle larger volumes of water. 2, implementing sustainable drainage systems that can naturally absorb excess water. And 3, collaborating with state and federal entities to secure funding for these improvements. Bland also encouraged residents to report their flooding damage impacts to federal officials for further assistance. Residents can visit Damage Self-Reporting Tool, homes and businesses. Here's the online address, https://survey123.arcgis.com/share/4 F as in Frank 19503, F as in Frank 107, E as in Edward 454, 1 AC, F as in Frank C 552514, C as in Charlie 0 D, B as in Barbara AA, period. With these measures, we can safeguard our communities from devastating floods, protect our properties, and ensure a safe, dry future for ourselves and future generations, Bland said. We call upon the Niagara County government and relevant authorities to prioritize this issue and act immediately to prevent further tragedies. Your support is critical. Sign this petition to demand the necessary changes to our water and sewer systems and help our homes and families from the threat of flooding, she said. Back to front page news on this August 14th edition of the Niagara Grand Island Tribune Dispatch Sentinel. The headline, Neighbors Grateful for SAMA, that's capital S-A-M-A, by David Conboy, President, Neighbors Foundation of Grand Island. The Grand Island Neighbors Foundation is deeply grateful to the Service and Mercy Alliance, parentheses, that's the SAMA abbreviation, all in caps, S-A-M-A, a local Muslim faith organization, for its generous donation of non-perishable food to support our food pantry and the Grand Island residents we serve. We sincerely appreciate SAMA's continued support of the Neighbors Foundation and our mission of Neighbors Helping Neighbors. Donations such as this help us provide confidential food assistance to local individuals and families experiencing food insecurity. We're also grateful for the warm invitation and generous hospitality extended to members of the Neighbors Foundation who joined SAMA for its summer picnic on Saturday, August 1st. We greatly enjoyed the opportunity to share fellowship, strengthen relationships, and celebrate the spirit of service that brings our community together. As an all-volunteer organization, the Neighbors Foundation relies on the generosity of individuals, faith communities, and local organizations such as SAMA to fulfill our mission. Its compassion and commitment demonstrate the very best of Grand Island, neighbors from different backgrounds working together to care for those in need. To learn more about the Neighbors Foundation, request assistance, or make a donation, please call 716-775-7998 or visit www.gineighbors.org. Neighbors Helping Neighbors. And there's a picture of a group assembled, Dr. Mohammed Kawar, Fahim Mojawala, Dr. Samira Kawar, Annie Carlson, Karen Conboy, and David Conboy, a black and white shot taken outside of one of the functions. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Tribune Sentinel covering Niagara County and Grand Island on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here is an article on page 8 that is of interest, the Friday, August 14th edition of the Gazette. First impressions of new Highmark Stadium, seat access, design issues among complaints, by Terry Duffy, editor-in-chief. Cruising through the maze of comments seen and heard this past week about the new Bills Highmark Stadium, I had to add a few more. First off, I'm a longtime Bills season ticket holder since the 1993 season. Old Rich Stadium, I still call it that, was cool. My seats were corner end zone, Bills side, section 127, 8 rows up. Awesome neighbors, the Chiefs, Elvis, the late Pancho Villa. Extreme Bills diehards all around. Truly great times. Was a second home. Now on to the new digs. Looking at a PSL cost of $5,000 each for two season tickets in a similar location at the new Highmark Stadium, I opted for the lower price alternative. I was offered two aisle seats 10 rows up in section 400. They came with a lower price PSL, $1,000 each, and cheaper annual season ticket renewal. I signed on. The virtual images offered by my Bills rep looked great, and in a brand new stadium to boot. So the preview came last Saturday night to check them out. Initial thoughts? Not bad, but there are issues. First off, a search for new parking arrangements. My earlier parking setup was at a friend's house across Southwestern Boulevard near the old stadium. But the new Highmark is further west near the old ECC on Big Tree Road. That means new parking. For Saturday, we lucked out and found something in the Maryland Drive neighborhood near Big Tree Road. A short walk, and the new stadium appeared right before us. Entry was easy with the new gate procedures. No more hassles here, unlike the older ticketing nightmares. I fondly remember those games of having Wi-Fi mobile ticketing suddenly cut out, or worse, of stadium ticket gates losing power and absolute fan chaos, parentheses, like what happened in the Gate 6 power loss during the Tampa night game a few years back. No issues here, except perhaps for the lack of refuse recycling containers as we approached the gate. And this stadium is definitely nice. Wider corridors, everything's all bright, new, clean. A fun atmosphere with excited fans. But accessing my seats in the upper echelons of the 400 level in this place? Well, that was something else. Mind you, this was the stadium tryout event for season ticket holders. After entering, I reached out to a Bills usher for assistance. I was misdirected to a wrong section on the opposite corner visitor side. No, I wanted section 400. I was then guided to a nearby gate for escalators. To reach the upper decks, I found one that was working and took the ride up. Then I was directed to a separate elevator to reach my upper corner area. Okay, this was different. At Old Rich Stadium, after the gate, our entry was via a stairway at midfield, then pass a few sections on the concourse over to section 127 and head down. In the new place, an escalator up two levels and elevator up one. You arrive in a corner area of section 300, just below section 400. Here, fans find gathering areas, restrooms, and some concessions. The area leads to a small porch viewing area off the field and stairway leading to the 400 level. From here, it was a climb up 10 rows to reach my two aisle seats on the left. Overall, there's good and some not so good up here. First off, my new seats are much closer, only 10 rows up versus 35 rows or so down in the older place. Plus, they're undercover. The seating is roomy with good legroom, and there's cup holders. And like I said, the field views are pretty good. And the new neighbors I met seem nice. But sitting in the 400s also has its drawbacks. And depending on where your actual seats are, they could be aggravating. The first thing I discovered is the lack of amenities. No restrooms or concessions to the fans sitting up here. That means a trip downstairs to the 300s for food and beverage. For the fan, say in row 18, with seats in the middle, that can be a chore, especially during mid-game chaos. Next issue had to do with the actual field views and obstructions. In this stadium's design, it seems that most of the areas of the 400 seating are accessed via the small stairwell setup from the 300s. For those fans in the lower rows, there's the potential of obstructed views down below to the field area. This could be a problem if fans or other visitors happen to be congregating in the stairwell platform area during games. Other complaints I heard include the smaller-than-expected, quote, jumbo, quote, scoreboards in both end zones, performance problems with the stadium's sound system, and obstructed views of the field, be it from the aforementioned stairwells, or even bigger sight problems in some upper-level corner seating from initial stadium design flaws. Grant you, many of these are new stadium issues for sure, but design flaws are not what fans expected in a $2 billion-plus stadium, especially fans accustomed to the old stadium that was known for its unobstructed views of the field from every seat. Thus far, Bills management, to its credit, is quickly responding to the complaints. The team issued the following after the first wave of feedback from the fans. Thank you to Bills Mafia for setting a new attendance record with more than 50,000 fans at the return of the blue and red. Saturday's practice was a great opportunity to test the new stadium. We are currently addressing internal and external feedback regarding the facility's operation following the first event. We'll utilize the next 6 weeks to refine any details as we prepare for the home opener on Thursday, September 17th. As the team moves forward, what is expected to be an exciting 2026 season, one can only hope that enthusiasm carries over to its fan base in the new Highmark Stadium. And here's an article on the Lewiston Art Festival that took place recently. Islanders shine at Lewiston Art Festival. There's a half page of photographs of different exhibits and exhibitors standing, showing their wares off from their different exhibiting tents. And there are some pictures with identification of them as follows, with this text. The photos are by Karen Carr Keefe. The Lewiston Art Festival, marking its 60th year in 2026, filled Center Street this past weekend with art, music, and crowds who enjoyed the art in the beautiful summer weather. Grand Island artists were well represented among the many colorful booths up and down Center Street. Here's a sampling of their work, and this narrates now the clockwise, counterclockwise configuration of pictures I was telling you about. Michael A. Cancilla Jr. explains some of the paintings in his booth to Lewiston resident John Lanier. Cancilla has enjoyed an artist's career after retiring about 7 years ago from a career in education and administration. Patty Cancilla is seen in her booth with customer Roberta Neubauer of Lewiston. Cancilla is a master artisan with many awards to her credit, including a second place award in jewelry at the 2023 Lewiston Art Festival. She creates jewelry from heirloom pieces and with decorative stone and hand-painted floral designs, often using her special wire-wrapped settings. Fritz Proctor III holds a painting of the Bedell House that he sold to Dick Crawford, pictured on the right, former Grand Island Town Highway Superintendent. Proctor, who grew up in Grand Island, enjoys painting in acrylic, watercolor, and oil. His work expresses a connection to the rural beauty of New York State. Maria Lorendi poses with her painting of DiCamillo Bakery in front of the subject of her painting, where her artist's booth was set up. Lorendi specializes in oil painting, including landscapes and portraits. She's won several awards at the Lewiston Art Festival, including the prestigious Purchase Award in 2025. And finally, the Lewiston Art Festival set of pictures shows Christina Lorendi Havens, who won a second place award at this year's Lewiston Art Festival along Center Street with her painting Fuchsia Parasol. She specializes in portrait and fine art. She shared a booth this year with her mother, Maria Lorendi. And further on the Lewiston Art Festival, Attica wife and husband duo take best in show at the art festival. By Joshua Maloney, GM's managing editor. Stag with Magpies was named Modern Art Awards Best in Show Saturday on the 60th Annual Lewiston Art Festival. There is a photo of this in color showing a very attractive slab of either rock or wood or both with a painting over it, showing a painting of a stylized, looks like a greyhound dog in a field with ducks and plants. Very attractive. Stag with Magpies was the name of the piece that I just mentioned. It's a mixed media piece crafted by Megan and Dylan Pratt, who operate Wood and Water Artistry. "I'm so shocked. It feels so validating," Megan said. "It's been a journey jumping off of what I was doing before. I was a general manager at a store. That was my full-time job. And then we had two little boys at home now. This is what we do on the weekends when we have time to go out and work. This is my full-time job now. This is very validating." "I'm insanely proud of her," Dylan said. "It's cool to see it being recognized for the way that I've always seen it." The winning piece, it's a stag with magpies on a slab of maple wood, Megan said. "I use pyrography to burn the line art, and then it's painted with watercolor, so it acts like a stain on the wood. It still keeps this wood texture showing through. The piece itself symbolizes the natural relationship between the stags and the magpies. The magpies will eat the ticks and protect the stag in that way, and they get to use its fur shed for their nests." Art Festival judge Maureen Kellick said all five jurors were drawn to this submission. The natural wood material was accented by the delicate painting and line work. Additionally, the theme, the subject, worked with the medium and presentation, a beautifully executed piece. Speaking of the inspiration for the piece, Megan said, "I do a lot of natural things with my work. I'm always looking for natural relationships and things like that, that feel whimsical and that most people may not know about. They might seem kind of ordinary on their own, but being able to paint it and kind of bring it to life makes it feel more magical." Dylan said, "This one actually came from a stump carving I did. I've done so many that it's hard to remember exactly. But I remember the piece of wood had, like, this rippling, and it was really beautiful. So I brought it home, and I showed it to her, and I'm like, what do you think of this? Because this was kind of our first time, our first piece that we've done for our run of slabs. So it's kind of the first mark, a big, ambitious one, for the future pieces that we want to do." Though Megan, watercolor painting, and Dylan, carving, each have about a decade of experience, "we've only been vending for about a year now," she explained. "Me and my husband work together. He's a chainsaw artist, so he brings me all of the wood cutoffs from his chainsaw carvings. A lot of what you see in our booth, a lot of it comes down in storms and things like that. They go to people's houses and carve the stumps. He brings me back the cutoffs, and he's used some of these cutoffs, so it's all kind of upcycled wood, if you think about it in balance. A lot of our pieces are experimental at this point. The winning piece, we really like working on slabs of wood. I can do a lot with them, but we use a lot of different kinds of woods, a lot of different shapes of wood." She noted, "This was our first time at Lewiston as a festival participant, and we're loving it." "It's in an area we don't come to very much," Megan said. "We live in Attica, so we're about an hour and a half away. It's a bit of a travel for us to really go anywhere, even in New York State. But we like the area a lot. We've been to a lot of different things here in Lewiston. We've gone to Art Park. We've been to lots of concerts there. We like the area, and we just like the general vibe here." Wood and Water Artistry is online at www.artofwoodlandwater.com. There's a picture in this article of Megan and Dylan Pratt on the right-hand side. Here's an article about a recent opened business. The Niagara Coffee Company brings unique approach to product. Their grand opening celebration was held on August 16 in Lewiston. The article by Joshua Maloney, the GM managing editor. "It's not hard to find a good cup of coffee in Lewiston, but that didn't deter Terilyn Scazzafara or Ian and Victoria Billings from opening a new cafe on Center Street. Not one bit. No guts, no glory, in my opinion," said Scazzafara, owner of Niagara Coffee Company. When surveying the local coffee market, she asked, "Are they freshly roasting it? Are they freshly grinding it and putting it into your drink? Are they handcrafting every drink when you want it?" (Cafe manager and barista Victoria Will close parentheses, make your drink with a decaf if you want it. She'll do anything you want. So whether there's 2 or 200 other places customers can find coffee, I feel my product speaks for itself, and it's a superior product, and I stand by it. That's why I'm here, Skazafava said. Formerly a participant at Lewiston Artisan Farmers Market, Niagara Coffee Company offered a brick and mortar at 402, they opened it at 402 Center Street, Suite 2, inside the Gallo Coal Fire Kitchen Courtyard. The business debuted in July, but its origin story goes back several years. About 2020, pandemic time, I started talking with my son, Master Roaster Ian, about possibilities for things to do, looking for a retirement job for myself. And we both love to cook, and we love coffee, Skazafava said. We started playing around and just roasting coffee in a Dutch oven on my stove, and we decided we liked it. We said, you know, why don't we go to coffee roasting school, learn the science, learn really about it, rather than just winging it, like I think a lot of folks are doing. We flew out to Minnesota. We went with some people at Mill City Roasts. We took some roasting classes. We looked at the different machines they had for sale, and we decided which machine would be best for us to start a roasting business. We wanted to start a roasting business, just a small little roast we'll bring to other cafes that will feature our beans. By 2023, everything is set up. The roastery is now set up. We spent a full year in the development of our signature blend, medium, which is our number one selling product. It kind of hits right in the middle. It's not light, it's not dark. We spent a full year on that, just over and over, till we felt we really nailed the roast profile, which is key. When you're roasting coffee, it's all about drum rotation, the airflow, the temperature, the speed, how much time. We did the Lewiston Artisan Farmers Market last summer, and that really helped a lot, Skazafava said. Niagara Coffee Company also partnered with Niagara University and Niagara Falls High School for events. The family inquired about the unit at Gallo. They met with owner Michael Hibbert and knew immediately that it was the right fit. He gave us a nice opportunity, Mr. Hibbert, to have a short-term trial through September to see how it goes, and at that time we'll decide what's happening, Skazafava said. Niagara Coffee Company's signature product is low in acidity, she noted, making it easier on the stomach. We spent a year in the way we blend our signature blend, she said. We have a light, medium, and a dark. We're blending through different regions, and we have a certain way of doing that, and a certain way of roasting that brings out the profile in my medium. And what you're going to taste in this medium profile is brown sugar, cinnamon, chocolate, and amaretto flavors, really lightly. We don't add any additives or anything. We just roast to bring out the flavors in the coffee. We bring those three regions together. That's El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Colombia. The menu features local products and Lewiston-themed names. I have these cinnamon buns I brought in fresh this morning from Lord's Lavender Farm in Ransomville. She bakes those fresh for me. We're featuring Begotten Farms from Lewiston's Honey in our drinks. We have Gator Farms maple syrup from Lockport we feature in our drinks. Hoover's Dairy in all our drinks. I'm actually going to start putting their milk in my case, and people can come in and get a jug of milk. We love their products. It's fresh from the farm, Skazafava said. Victoria is the master coffee creator, thoughtfully and artfully mixing ingredients with fresh ground coffee or a hot chocolate mix she makes herself. I worked at chain coffee shops for a long, long time, she said. My first job at 17 was at Dunkin' Donuts, and then I worked there for probably like 4 or 5 years. I worked at pretty much every location that's been in the area in the last 10 years, even the ones that are closed now. She worked at Tim Hortons, too. I really like making stuff. When it comes to girls' night, I'm always the one that's like, let's make fun cocktails. Let's do mythology stuff. It is definitely partial experience, and then partial I just like that. I just like to do it. I enjoy it, Victoria said. And then my sister, Caitlin Davidson, She works at Kraft in Pendleton, and she is their head barista over there and has been for the last 2 years. So anytime I have a question or I'm not sure about something, I'm like, hey, quick question, what do you guys do? How did it go? What was the reception? It's nice to have that sounding board, too, to bounce it off of, because they kind of have a more handcrafted drink type thing, like this. Niagara Coffee Company is open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday. We're excited to be here, Skazafava said. We're just happy to bring a good product to the community. We love our product, and we're just happy to share it with everybody. The grand opening celebration was on Sunday, August 16th, which featured live music, drink specials, and giveaways. I think this broadcast is in time for a news article about the coming of the production, musical production, 1776, on the 22nd and 3rd of August. It's going to be presented by the Porter Players in association with the Youngstown Presbyterian Church on the outdoor stage of the historic Post Theater at Fort Niagara State Park. That's 6 Porter Avenue in Youngstown. There'll be 2 performances on Saturday at 2 and 5:30 and a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday. There's no admission fee, but donations are gratefully accepted. Patrons are asked to bring their own outdoor chairs. This is a semi-staged production, a kind of hybrid between a concert version and a fully staged production. The show premiered on Broadway in 1969, came out on film in 1972, and has enjoyed many productions nationwide since then. It's one of many productions throughout the country, taking place this year in honor of this country's 250th anniversary. Here from the Cracker Barrel section of the paper, an assortment of local announcements of events that are going to be taking place, which I will try to give you the versions that will be the most closely related to the time you listen to this broadcast. The Lions Club to hold one white cane drive. The Grand Island Lions Club will hold its annual White Cane Drive on Friday and Saturday, August 21st and 2nd, inviting the community to celebrate one of the club's long-standing fundraising traditions. Volunteers will be accepting donations at Tops Friendly Market on Grand Island Boulevard throughout both days. In addition, Lions members will be greeting motorists during the Friday morning commute at the intersections of Grand Island Boulevard and Long Road and Stony Point Road on Staley Road. The White Cane Drive is more than a fundraiser. It's a symbol of the Lions' unwavering commitment to serving those in need. Since 1925, the White Cane has represented independence and mobility for individuals who are blind or visually impaired. Today, the annual drive helps Lions continue their mission of improving lives and doing that both locally and around the world. For nearly 70 years, funds raised through the White Cane Drive support a wide range of humanitarian programs, including vision and hearing initiatives, assistance for children and families, community service projects, disaster relief efforts, and programs that improve the quality of life for those in need. Every dollar donated is used exclusively for humanitarian purposes. Back to school bash. Do you know that the Salvation Army of Tonawanda is also responsible for Grand Island? It would like to help school children be ready for the first day of school. So it's having a back to school bash from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, August 26. All children from Grand Island who need supplies are welcome to come and attend the event at 46 Broad Street, Tonawanda. To help them with needed supplies, the Grand Island Rotary Club is asking for donations from the community. Please consider donating pencil, paper, erasers, backpack, or any other supplies. The donations will be collected in bins at Tops, Dollar General, Dollar Tree, and Walgreens. They thank you for your support. Itty Bitty Lap Sit and Storytime with Miss Stephanie meets from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursdays, August 20th and 27th, and September 10th. Itty Bitty Lap Sit and Storytime is designed for newborns, designed for newborns and babies through little ones just learning to walk. The program is designed to introduce little ones and their adults to group story time and introduce basic literary concepts. Featured are the interactive book, simple songs, and gentle movements lasting about 15 to 20 minutes. The story time will be followed by tummy time and playtime. Registration is required. Intro to AI from 6 to 7 p.m., Thursday, August 20. Actually, that is today as I read this. Hopefully, this will go out relatively soon. But if it's already over, this was an interactive program. More will probably follow in the same line. It was a project to learn how AI is shaping the world and how it influences everyday life, from voice assistance to personalized recommendations, introducing key AI concepts in simple, practical terms to make a person feel more confident using and understanding the evolving technology. Special story time with guest author Susan Blair at 10 a.m., Tuesday, August 25. This preschool story time program is designed for children who are ready to sit longer and who begin practicing school-age appropriate behaviors such as listening, hand-raising, and following simple instructions. The program is designed to increase early literacy skills, promote independent thoughts and behaviors, and will feature more sitting, more discussion, and less movement. Children will learn at their own pace. Story time will last 30 to 40 minutes, featuring 2 to 3 books. There'll be one 15 to 30 minute playtime and social time afterward. Registration is required. The Buffalo and Erie County Public Libraries have more than $3.2 million materials, books, e-books, DVDs, music, and more. Free library cards, traditional and e-library, are available to Erie County residents and to those who work and or attend school in Erie County. So that would apply, of course, to our listeners. Follow the library on Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Flickr, and on our podcast, All Booked Up. For more information, call 716-858-8900 or visit http://www.buffalolib.org. Pedal for Parks 2026 to roll again. The ride celebrates America 250 and the beauty of New York State parks. This is a press release from the parks. The Niagara region of the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation announced the third annual Pedal for Parks, presented by the Maid of the Mist in support of local New York State parks. The non-competitive, family-friendly ride will take place Sunday, September 20th. That's September 20th, and will start at Fort Niagara State Park. There are three different routes with various lengths that will take riders through Art Park, Joseph Davis Fort Niagara, Four Mile Creek, Wilson Tuscarora, Devil's Hole, Whirlpool, and Niagara Falls State Parks. The 100-kilometer ride goes to Golden Hill State Park. The routes for the ride will show off millions of dollars in recent investments made by New York State Parks in partnership with Niagara River Greenway, the New York Power Authority, the New York State Department of Transportation, and the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Foundation and the local trail system. All proceeds will stay in Western New York and support programming in the parks. Qualified New York State Parks Access Pass and Lifetime Liberty Pass holders can send proof of eligibility to Angela.Berti, that's A-N-G-E-L-A dot B-E-R-T-I, at parks.newyork.gov to receive a discount code to register for the 11 and 19-mile rides. More information and registration can be found at https://nystateparksbikeride.com. itsyourrace.com. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Tribune Sentinel, covering Niagara County and Grand Island, on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here from the Friday, August 14th issue on the Grand Island side is an article, Ribbon Cutting Held for New Electronic Vehicle Charging Stations. Story and photo by senior contributing writer Alice Girard. There's a picture of Larry Playfair, Michael Playfair, owners of the Plaza, Whitney Skanes, lead program manager for National Grid's Electric Vehicle Make Ready program, and Mike Smith and Mike Prinzi, co-owners of PPR Energy Solutions. Everyone is smiling, and it's very sunny in this photograph. They are beaming in the sun. They have a large scissors at their side, probably from the river, the ribbon cutting. And here's the article written by Alice Girard. Grand Island now has four new electric vehicle charging stations at a plaza owned by Larry and Michael Playfair at 1738 Grand Island Boulevard, close to the bridges that link Grand Island to Tonawanda. The Grand Island Chamber of Commerce held a ribbon cutting for the new fast charging stations on August 5th. The charging stations started with an idea that Western New Yorkers need more opportunities to find easily accessible places to charge their vehicles. Basically, what we were doing was looking at different sites throughout Western New York that need chargers, explained Mike Prinzi, principal of Pure Performance Renewable Energy Solutions, PPR Energy Solutions it's called, who worked on the project with his business partner, Mike Smith, an electrician. We looked at it from a need standpoint first. We couldn't find the DC fast charging available to the public. There are infrastructure maps out there that show where all the chargers are located. We were fortunate enough to meet Larry Playfair. We pitched the project to him. He seemed receptive to it. Maybe he'd been a little skeptical at first. EV chargers, what are we doing? But eventually we were able to get the project off the ground. It took about 12 months of development. We were able to take advantage of some of the incentives that were out there, one being from National Grid. Then we built it in about a month. This thing went live in mid-June of this year. We've seen utilization numbers that are off the charts, way more than we expected. If you put charging in the right locations, if you build it in the right locations, people will come to the chargers, Prinzi said. He's the co-owner of PPR Energy Solutions. We didn't expect that there would be this much participation. We're getting utilization numbers that are off the charts, beyond what we expected. When asked what he thought about the project, Gilbert said, "It's great. It's good to see this project come together and have these chargers installed. They're being used a lot, as you can see here today. People have been coming in and out of here all day. It's great to see, and it's another alternative. We're happy to bring it here to Grand Island." Skanes said, "National Grid is committed to the future of clean transportation. We work with a lot of installers for our upstate electric service territory, and we anticipate funding into the future. At this moment, we're on a pause. The program is waiting for additional approvals that the state would authorize additional funding in the future. At this point in time, we're really excited to celebrate where we've come. Over 7,500 plugs have been utilized, incentivized through upstate New York by way of National Grid's program. We're trailblazing here and really excited to be here today to celebrate this installation that's getting so much value for our community, for tourism, and for our tourism industry and our customers." Playfair added, "It's clean. The customers are generally in and out. It's more business for the tenants in the plaza. So it's a winning combination." Back to page one news. Here's an article, Niagara County Leaders Present $15,000 to Niagara Aerospace Museum, submitted by the Office of the Niagara County Legislator, Christopher McKimmy. Niagara County Legislature Majority Leader Randy Brandt and Deputy Majority Leader Christopher McKimmy presented a $15,000 Community Partnership Fund grant to the Niagara Aerospace Museum. Executive Director Lindsay Polenkars, along with board members Don Irwin and Allison O'Connor, accepted the check on behalf of the museum. The funding will help the museum to retain a curator to professionally catalog and inventory its collection of aerospace artifacts, helping preserve the collection while positioning the museum for future growth and opportunity. The National Aerospace Museum preserves an important part of Western New York's history, and as an Air Force veteran, that mission is especially important to me, McKinney said. I have vivid memories of visiting the museum as a Civil Air Patrol cadet when it was located in the former Carborundum Center on 4th Street. Preserving our rich aerospace history and making it accessible to future generations is something I'm proud to support. McKinney has been a strong advocate for the museum and its future and has worked on these efforts with Assemblyman Angelo Morinello, who is also a veteran. Both have supported efforts to increase the museum's visibility, attendance, and opportunities for future growth. In January, McKinney formally issued a letter of support for the museum and later worked with Brandt to help secure the county funding. The Community Partnership Fund allows us to make targeted investments in organizations that strengthen Niagara County, Brandt said. This funding will help the Aerospace Museum properly preserve and document its collection while preparing for future growth and new opportunities. McKinney added, as veterans, Assemblyman Morinello and I understand the importance of preserving the history of those who served, as well as the aviation and aerospace industries that have played such an important role in our community. Niagara County has an incredible aerospace story, and we want to make sure that story continues to be preserved, shared, and built upon for generations to come. Now here is back to more storm water information on damage reports, as I talked about earlier in this session. This is in reverse print on page 7, so it stands out quite a bit. Niagara County Emergency Services, New York State, collecting storm damage reports, submitted by the Public Information Office. Niagara County Director of Emergency Services Jonathan Schultz announced the New York State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services has released a form to track damages from heavy rainfall and flash flooding events from July 28th and 9th and August 2nd and 3rd, 2026. The state will now be tracking all information related to the aforementioned. The purpose of this form is solely to collect information that may help state and local officials identify supplemental damages to develop and augment potential requests for available federal assistance programs. This form is not an application for relief programs. Quote, we recognize some homeowners and businesses incurred some significant damage from the rain and flooding, and we want to do all we can to seek relief funds to help them, Schultz said. The first step in attempting to secure any funding is being able to produce data on the impact of the storms. That's why we need people to fill out the damage forms. To fill out the form, visit https://www.dhsnstephen.ny.gov/ and click on Report Damage. Please be as specific as you can. Reporting damage is a voluntary activity, and it is not a substitute for reporting damage to your insurance agency, nor does it guarantee disaster relief assistance. Here is a little note from the Pet Place, which is sponsoring the SPCA Pet of the Week. Here is a picture showing a playful-looking, spirited best friend whose name is Tyler. And then it says Taylor, so I think that it looks like it's Tyler. I see that is listed more than once in the article. Meet Tyler. At around a year old and 35 pounds, Tyler is what you'd exactly expect from an adolescent husky mix, full of energy, full of personality, and just the right amount of sass to keep you smiling. This handsome guy is looking for a patient, active family that's ready to embrace all the fun and occasional mischief that comes with a young husky. Tyler is still learning the ropes, and with consistency, training, and plenty of exercise, he's sure to blossom into an incredible companion. When it comes to other dogs, we're still searching for Tyler's perfect match. He's had a couple of dog introductions that weren't successful, but that doesn't mean this compatible canine friend isn't out there. Any resident dogs will need to meet Tyler before an adoption. Tyler is looking for a cat-free home. The good news, he's met children and has been very friendly with them, making him a wonderful candidate for an active family that is ready for an adventurous young dog. This from the SPCA of Niagara, located 2100 Lockport Road, Niagara Falls, New York. Telephone number 716-731-4368. And a final article of interest that might be something that you would enjoy hearing about. The Upward Niagara Chamber celebrates M, as in Mary, M Power Agency. That's manpower, of course. The Upward Niagara Chamber of Commerce held a ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday for M Power Agency, 21 Main Street, Lockport. Per its website, Empower focuses on helping clients with making informed decisions with their risk management and insurance options. Independent brokers can help with Medicare, dental insurance, vision insurance, life insurance, final expense, travel insurance, and jet insurance. Showing the chamber pictured with some of the members are three black and white shots, group shots. From left we see identified Hector Decise, D-E-S-S-I-S, Colby Furchin, and Jamie Ratter. They're joined in the second photo by Upward Niagara Chamber of Commerce President Amanda Hasley. She's in that shot twice, actually. So the Niagara Frontier Chamber is celebrating that agency this cycle. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the August 14th issue of the Tribune Sentinel, covering Niagara County and Grand Island. We read from the Tribune Sentinel every Saturday at 4 p.m. Your reader has been Rick Lawrence. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. Following that at 6 o'clock is the Jamestown Post Journal. And at 7 o'clock, we have the Niagara Falls Review. Stay with us for these readings and more. If you or people you know shop at any of the Dash's supermarkets, please save Dash's register tapes for radio reading. Our agency receives $2 for every $100 in Dash's register tapes. Radio reading has raised thousands of dollars so far. Anyone can drop off their Dash's tapes to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 1199 Harlem Road, Cheektowaga, between William and Clinton Streets. Or Dash's tapes can be mailed to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 1199 Harlem Road, Cheektowaga, New York, 14227. Any questions on Dash's tapes for radio reading? Call us at 716-821-5555, and thanks for caring. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability.